What are people up to in town? Find out on Out There Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 5 on Valley Free Radio for live encounters from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a scene between me and you on my rocking bicycle that's built for two. And thanks for tuning in to Out There today. It is Wednesday, October 31st, also known as Halloween. Today will be the Rag Shag Halloween Parade in downtown Florence. I think it starts at 5:30. I think I would know what time it starts because I've ridden by that sign so many times on the corner of Trinity Row and Route 9. Anyway, people gather there. The great thing about the Rag Shag Parade, it's the only parade that I can think of in Northampton where it's just people filling the streets. There aren't like motorized floats and trucks and tractors and things like that. Just families and kids who knows, boats, maybe a rickshaw. I got a rickshaw lying in wait. Actually, I brought the rickshaw by the Florence Farmers Market today. I think this was the last Wednesday Florence Farmers Market of the season, I believe. And it got over early today. It's getting over right now at 4 to make way for the Rag Shag Parade set up, I think. Anyway, if you want to join the Rag Shag Parade, it starts at Trinity Row, which is like where South Main breaks off of Route 9 in Florence on the Silk Mill end of Florence. And people will go down Main Street to the Florence Civic Center. I think usually there's popcorn, maybe. And then people go trick-or-treating all around Florence. And if you want some healthy treats, then you can stop by my house. You can trick-or-treat at my house. But only take them if you're going to eat them. I went to Deals and Steals yesterday to get some Halloween candy with a friend of mine. And I was doing my best to buy the junkiest junk food I could, but it was really hard. I'm telling you, I just couldn't help but walk out of there with some old energy bars. The things, the compromises I make for neighborhood relations, I'm telling you. Let's see. So for today's show, I'm not quite sure what all I've got for today's show. I don't have any live guests, and I don't have any big, grand recorded interviews from the week. But I do have some stories and some things that have been on my mind a little bit. And since I was just mentioning the rickshaw, I think I'll talk about that a little bit more. So my previous two shows, which would have been, I think, 2 weeks ago and 2 weeks before that, were about this rickshaw. Oh, by the way, the previous two shows of Out There were every other week. All summer I've been doing every other week and alternating with Caroline Ruderman of Energy Matters. But starting today, Out There is now back to weekly, and Caroline's show is airing on Fridays. I'm not sure what time. You can look on the valleyfreeradio.org on the schedule for the time. Friday afternoon, maybe 4, something like that. Yeah, I believe it's 4 o'clock Friday afternoons. So the last two shows, I interviewed this man, Mikael, from France, who had built a rickshaw. He and his three kids came to the United States for a month to visit. It was their first time here. And he contacted me through Couchsurfing. And he told me that he had always had this dream of traveling through the United States on a rickshaw with his family. He didn't know why, but he'd always had that dream. So when they got here, they built a rickshaw slash covered wagon slash RV with pedal assist, not to be confused with electric assist. There was no electricity, but when I say pedal assist, the two rear wheels of the rickshaw were bikes, and two of the kids would pedal and provide the forward momentum. And so they spent a week building it with scavenge parts and stuff here in Northampton, and then they spent a week traveling with it. They went south down to Connecticut, and I went with them off and on for most of the week. And it was a really, really, really amazing experience to travel with this family. The kids were ages 8, 10, and 13, didn't speak any English, and I don't speak any French. But I didn't hear a complaint out of them, like, ever. Just really happy to be outside in nature, using our bodies, swimming in the rivers, Farmington River, the Congleman Ponds, where else did we swim? Stratton Brook Pond, a little October swimming. Anyway, it was a really great experience, and I ended up bringing the rickshaw back. They helped me tie it to the back of my bicycle, and I biked it 55 miles back to Florence. This was a couple weeks ago. And so now it's mostly living at my house. But so, what is the story of the rickshaw? It's sort of this is something that I wrote last week. What is the story of the rickshaw? This evening, after the sun had set in the yard, I climbed the tall white pine tree above the bike path bench. As I peeked out from high up, suddenly the distant mountains came into view. The Mount Tom Range, still illuminated by sunlight. What do the mountains and birds see? Our yard was just a tiny spot, blending in with a mosaic of backyards and houses on the block, almost indistinguishable. What is the story of the rickshaw? For me, the stories about how Mika and his family came from France, split a black locust log, scavenged bike lab bikes and parts, tied it all together, and off they went. It's about the... I can't read my writing. It's about the bat from the raft log by the Congleman Ponds. The bat that fell out of the tree that we pushed over to build a raft with. It's about racing Tsunamo, the 8-year-old, across the Stratton Pond beach, or swimming in the Farmington River current, the raging current where we put ropes across the river to hold on to. It's about the 3-hour conversation with Tom, who insisted on riding back with me in the rickshaw turned bike trailer, all the way back to Southwick. He was the man who hosted me in Simsbury, Connecticut, when I showed up on the bike ride back with the rickshaw. I showed up, it was pouring rain that evening, and the temperature was scheduled to drop, so I knew I couldn't make it back to Northampton, so I was looking for an inside place to stay since I was drenched, and he welcomed me in. But then we ended up having this conversation, a very long conversation about politics that was very much for me about trying to bridge divides. For me, the story of the rickshaw, it's about all the children's playful voices, the shared meals and shared vision and a chosen way of life, a simplified chosen way of life. And it's about the pictures of all the other things that Mikael has built in nature and the call to discover our roots. But Alex's story of the rickshaw, Alex is my housemate and co-conspirator in many things, Alex's story of the rickshaw, maybe it's one of an amazing, creative, fun, human-powered vehicle, cleverly constructed and generously given. An adventure machine to enjoy with his children, friends, and with his adult friends. There's so many stories yet to be written about it, and it has so many stories I don't know or haven't thought about. Maybe its story is about the black locust tree that grew in the woods along the old trolley line in Florence, where the cement plant now is. Or maybe it's about the cedar tree that we cut branches off of to brace it. Or about the bike that was used for many years by a longtime pedal person that became one of the wheels of the rickshaw. The stories will be written and rewritten, and no one owns them, certainly not me. My story of the rickshaw is only about its first 2 weeks. Now it's almost twice that old. I feel like I helped birth it. But like any child, it's its own being now. I want to guide it through the world safely. I want everyone to know its heritage, its ancestry, its history, and the values and dreams that birthed it. Yesterday evening, around dusk, I had a migraine headache coming on, so I grabbed a blanket and crawled into the rickshaw. My head was in a fog, yet for an hour I dozed and dreamed blissfully from within the net and bamboo shelter. When I awoke, the full moon was rising. I was where I was meant to be. The stories of the rickshaw will continue to be written. All right. Next. Oh, by the way, you're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5, followed by Democracy Now! At 5 o'clock. So here's something else I wrote. Speaking of sweet dreams, so this is called Big Mama Bus. And this is about a cozy dream I had about sleeping on the bus. So I had recently returned from one of my frequent trips to Kentucky, which involve an overnight bus ride, coming and going. In my dream, I was curled up in the darkness, two bus seats to myself, nestled in a ball between the tall seat backs and the square window wall. It was my cozy spot. No worries. Being magically transported to another land, surrounded by fellow travelers, all in their own dream world. Some having recently crossed the U.S.-Mexico border with children asleep in their laps. Some fleeing bad relationships, or going to funerals, or weddings, or chasing love, or going back to an unknown life newly released from jail. On the bus, I feel safe, relaxed. Someone else does the driving, someone professionally trained. On my last trip, the Peter Pan bus driver had his own honor printed on the outside of the bus, certifying that he had driven 3 million miles accident-free. I tried to calculate that. I think I estimated that was like 30 years of accident-free based on how much I thought a person might drive in a year. I don't know how the bus drivers stay awake on the overnight buses. I usually feel like I'm drugged, weights tied to my eyelids, fog permeating my brain. Even if the bus driver or another driver does make a mistake, the size and the build of the bus makes its passengers pretty likely to survive. 26 hours on a bus probably isn't most people's idea of a good time. It's okay. You get breaks every few hours. Plus, you can always walk up and down the aisle to the bathroom. I lived in Chicago for most of the 1990s, which was like an 8-hour bus ride from my parents' place in Kentucky. That's where I take the bus to all the time. I go to Kentucky to see my family. My parents, mostly. So I used to think that 8-hour bus ride from Chicago to southeastern Kentucky was long. But then, after I spent 6 months in prison, an 8-hour bus ride didn't feel like anything. In recent years, I've taken the bus or bus-train combos to Texas, to the West Coast, to Mexico City, and back twice. Oh, the buses in Mexico were the worst, because they played movies all the time, and I could never get peace of mind. I mean, like, even till 1 in the morning, they'd play these violent American U.S. movies. But they were fine besides that. Well, I guess the extortionist checkpoints were a little confusing to me, too. So buses in the United States are even more chilled out by comparison. Just make sure when you plan your trip that you leave enough time for breakdowns, late buses, late drivers, hurricanes, etc. Have a backup plan and at least $25 cash in your pocket if you have to change a Greyhound ticket or buy a walk-up ticket or stand by on Megabus. And if you do that, your trip should be pleasant and relaxing. Happy travels. All right, now I wanted to play a song, but I didn't have time to get it queued up in time before the show started, so I'll play this, and then I'll come back to the song. Oh, yeah. This is from the Woodstar bathroom that I came across last week. So I was in the middle of doing downtown trash this morning and had to go to the bathroom, and so I went to Woodstar Cafe, and they have men's restroom and women's restroom. And outside the door of each one, there's a little plaque on the wall, a little sign on the wall that says, "Due to the Commonwealth's antiquated plumbing code, our restroom signs are required to be designated either male or female. Gender diversity is celebrated at the Woodstar Cafe, and all are welcome to use the restroom that best fits their identity." All right, this is Jonathan Richmond.
Well, a welfare gal and her drunk galoot, and nobody wearing a three-piece suit. You meet folks this way, just don't see why flying. So, you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time. Well, welfare gal and her drunken cuss, and Pepsi cans rolling around the bus, had newspapers and grit, and you've got slime. So, you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time. Where it's Salt Lake City, everybody off. Salt Lake City, everybody off with Elko, Wells, and Reno down the line. So, you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time. But Jonathan,
you're crazy for taking the bus.
Well, I'm crazy, so what's the fuss?
2 whole days on that stinking bus.
Yes, and I sleep fine. So, you take the plane, I'll take the bus this time. Go, Donnie, tell him. Look at it this way. They don't want my name, and I don't want their baggage claim. My guitar is seated right where I'm. So, you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time. Well, you got the old fat guy in his old tank top, the Wendover Casino stop, and then, of course, Winnemucca and Wells and Anaheim. So, you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time. When it's Salt Lake City, everybody up. Salt Lake City, everybody off with Elko, Wells, and Reno down the line. So, you take the plane, I'll take the bus this time. But Jonathan,
you're crazy for taking the bus.
Well, I'm crazy, so what the fuss?
2 whole days on a stinking bus.
Yeah, and I sleep fine. So you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time.
All right, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Next, I'm going to do a little reading here. So last night, I went to a planning meeting in downtown Florence at the Florence Civic Center that was sponsored by the planning department of the city of Northampton. It was a lot about zoning and what we want Florence, specifically Florence, which is the village of Northampton. It's what we want Florence to look like in the future. So I think in the last, I want to say 10 or 15 years, I think they said there have been maybe 5 new buildings in Florence. Some of the more recent ones, which if you live in town, you may have noticed, are the Cumberland Farms that was redone, and also the building on the corner of Maple and North Maple. The one on the south, the southeast corner there, that's sort of a very square building whose corner is right up in the corner of the street with a sort of a narrow sidewalk and a wheelchair accessible ramp that's tied up between the sidewalk and Route 9. But then there's also a proposed birthing center building that's proposed for Maple Street between Parsons Block, between the Shays Building and Pivot Media. So that we saw the design for that building, which the design is, the access to the building is very car-centric. There's no sidewalk access. The access is your turn into a driveway and drive or bike or walk into the parking lot, it looks like. So the meeting last night was about, do we want to change zoning, and how do you change zoning? Like, how do you make it affordable and inclusive for a wide variety of businesses? Because if you make too many restrictions, then like only the big box stores can afford to jump through all the hoops or whatever. Anyway, it was a good meeting. There were probably 100 people there. There are a lot of people passionate about living in Florence and happy about all the things that Florence offers, all the practical things like a hardware store and post office and library and pizza, farmer's market, all those things. Anyway, this is an article that I came across this afternoon as I was frantically thinking about my show. I mean, calmly thinking about the great opportunity that I'm given to be on the radio. Okay, so this is from activelivingresearch.org. Okay, this is called Moving Toward Active Transportation, How Policies Can Encourage Walking and Bicycling. There's just a couple pages here I want to share. Walking and cycling for daily trips can provide valuable regular physical activity, but currently, few Americans walk or ride a bike as part of their daily routine. Even fewer ride full rickshaws, I've noticed. most rely on their automobiles to go to work, to shop for groceries, or to just get around. As a result, active travel, such as walking or biking for routine trips, is not a significant part of daily life for most Americans, providing little, if any, regular physical activity. Lack of physical activity is a major risk factor in over 5 million, or 9%, of premature deaths worldwide. In economic terms, the burden from lack of physical activity is estimated to be $117 billion, or 9 to 11% of total healthcare costs in the United States. According to the latest U.S. household travel survey data, only 11% of all trips are taken by foot, 1% by bicycle, and 2% by public transport, which usually also involves either walking or riding a bike to and from a train station or a bus stop. Higher rates of active travel are found in Western European countries, such as Germany, the UK, and the Netherlands. I would imagine in lots of other countries around the world, too. Active travel can be a big help in reaching recommended daily levels of physical activity of at least 30 minutes on most days or 150 minutes per week. Driving is a major source of physical inactivity and is associated with overweight and obesity. In a review of 10 studies, 8 provided evidence suggesting that higher levels of driving, either as time or as distance in a motor vehicle, are associated with a higher risk of increased weight. One reason why so many people drive in the United States is decades of car-centric planning, which has led to a system that makes driving convenient and cheap, but poses many obstacles to walking, cycling, and transit use. Examples of car-centric planning include: transportation decisions have mostly been based on measurements of the delays that cars experience on existing roads. Maybe the delays that motorists experience on existing roads, a practice that can lead to the building of large roads that only accommodate cars. Another example of car-centric planning is a minimum supply of car parking is mandated for most new buildings, such as private homes, businesses, shops, or restaurants. As a result, for most trips in the United States, car parking is free, and there's often an ample supply of it. So that's something that came up in the meeting at the Florence Civic Center last night a lot, because if you look at downtown Florence, so much of it is paved over. And a lot of this has to do with the zoning, that a certain number of car parking spaces are required per, like, say, if you have a restaurant. I think, don't quote me on this, but it's like you have to have one car parking space for every 3 seats at your restaurant. Or if you have a commercial space, you have to have an X number of parking spots per square footage or whatever. So that's part of why people who want to build new buildings, they can sort of be in a fix because they have to have a certain amount of space to devote to parking. It's interesting to look at the Pie Bar, which basically has no parking. I think there's like room for 2 cars or 2 employees park right behind it. But because it was grandfathered or grandmothered in. And so when they put in the Pie Bar a few years ago, they didn't rebuild. And so they were able to keep the same parking, whatever they already had before, whatever the barbershop that was there before had, I guess. But it doesn't seem to have impeded their business. People find a place to park. People park all up and down Chestnut Street, and that doubles as doing traffic calming on Chestnut Street, in my opinion. So I'm not convinced that the requirements for X number of parking spaces that makes sense. Another thing that you'll see in downtown Florence with the required parking spaces is that Florence Savings Bank has a certain number of parking spaces that are mostly used from 8 a.m. to 4:30 or 5 p.m. and then they're all cleared out. And then, but then, like, JJ's Tavern, their parking needs are mostly later, and so there should be more ability for businesses to share parking spaces, especially if they don't, if they don't overlap during the time of day, don't overlap. All right, back to this thing. So another example of car-centric planning in the United States is the federal government allows a deduction of up to $250 for car parking compared to a $130 deduction for purchasing transit or commuter tickets. Here's another thing. Like, I think that there aren't, like, can't you count off, like, fuel costs if you drive for work? Can't you count off fuel costs? But I eat a lot of food, and that's my fuel. So my food costs should be, I should be able to count those off if I filed that kind of filing. Anyway, people who don't drive should be able to count their food as their fuel, I believe. What else? Gasoline and vehicle taxes pay only about 60-70% of roadway building and maintenance expenditures by all levels of government. The rest is paid for by non-transport related taxes, such as property sales or income taxes. So sometimes I've had people say to me, get off the road, you don't pay for it. I'm like, well, yeah, actually, I do pay for it, or part of it. All right. At the same time, you know, people are more likely to drive because of obstacles, so walking or bicycling or using public transit, like lack of sidewalks, crosswalks, and bikeways, lack of connectivity of pedestrian or bike infrastructure, actual and perceived dangers of walking and cycling, and poor supply of public transport. Active travel can be a significant source of regular physical activity when built into daily routines, and in most cases it requires few skills, little extra time, and is inexpensive. Most daily trips are within easy walking or biking distance. So anyway, this paper goes on, but one thing that I really like about living in Florence and Northampton, I know people say that public transportation, like I hear people complain about public transportation a lot, but I'm telling you, where I come from, it's 80 miles to get to the nearest bus, public transportation of like any kind. And so to be able to walk for a couple blocks and there's a bus every hour that goes from Florence to Northampton, at least one bus. I think that's pretty great. And you can get from Williamsburg to Northampton. I mean, you can get all over. Anyway, I think it's a really amazing resource, and I'd like to see us take advantage of it as much as we can to support it into the future so that public transit thrives. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. And how about some Pointer Sisters? Nice. Oh, no, not that. Yeah, I'm going to play the Pointer Sisters. Come.
y'all. Oh, yeah, we can make it, y'all. If we only try. Yeah, yeah, hey, we can make it, y'all. Sometimes it's hard. Yeah, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard. Oh, but we can make it, y'all.
Thanks for listening to Out There Today. Here's an announcement coming up November 3rd. That is this Saturday. Is the Fall Recycling Rally at Smith Vocational High School. The Northampton's Reuse Committee presents their Fall Recycling Rally November 3rd from 9 a.m. to noon at Smith Voc, 80 Locust Street in Northampton. You can bring your jack-o'-lanterns if you didn't make pumpkin soup out of them. Oh, by the way, it's good to not paint your jack-o'-lanterns because the paint's not good for the compost. You can bring, right, so you can bring jack-o'-lanterns to compost at the fall, at the event on Saturday. You can bring clothing and textiles for fabric recycling. Selected medical equipment, I'm not sure what that is. Bicycles, Bikes Not Bombs is doing a bike drive. You can also bring bikes to the bike lab anytime, any Saturday. You can go on the Pedal People website for more information about the bike lab. Anyway, but Saturday at Smith Voc, you can bring bikes. You can bring rigid, bulky plastic items and white styrofoam. No paper shredding will be offered at this event. You can look on the city's website for more information about that. All right. Last time on my show, I think I told a little story about talking with a guy who was blowing leaves with a gas-powered leaf blower downtown at a very high volume with wet, sticky leaves. And after that show, a listener, Tim McNerney, said, "Hey, Ruthie, you should get in touch with Catherine Morris. She's trying to get a city ordinance passed about leaf blowers." And so I emailed her, but I didn't hear back. But then, floating around our kitchen counter, I saw a copy of a letter to the editor she had written. So I'll share this. To the editor, hundreds of American cities and towns have passed laws to ban or regulate the use of leaf blowers, particularly gas-powered leaf blowers. Why? In part, because of the heavy contribution of gas-powered leaf blowers to air pollution. A single small gas-powered leaf blower creates as much air pollution as 50 full-sized sedans. I mean, if you know how much I don't like cars, you know, imagine me not liking leaf blowers 50 times as much. Anyway, the exhaust from the gas-powered leaf blowers is much higher in nitrous oxide than from automobiles. And unlike the auto exhaust, the exhaust from leaf blowers consists in large part of a fine spray of oils and hydrocarbons. These are inhaled into human and animal lungs. This can cause emphysema, heart attacks, and cancer. One Connecticut expert has argued that Connecticut's status as the state with the highest incidence of lung cancer is due to the extensive use of gas-powered leaf blowers there. Wait, are you serious? Well, of course, there is the noise pollution problem. A typical gas-powered leaf blower will produce a noise level of 75 decibels at 50 feet and 100 decibels at close range. Often, two or more blowers are being used simultaneously at a nearby house. These levels can cause serious hearing losses, and prolonged exposure can increase the incidence of heart attacks. It just drives me crazy. Anyway, isn't it time for Northampton and other Western Mass communities to take action to control the annoyance and damage caused by gas leaf blowers? That, of course, is in addition to the already poor quality of the air in the valley. That's by Catherine Morris, Northampton, and Bernard Miller Amherst, Professor Emeritus of Organic Chemistry at UMass. And I want to mention that electric-powered leaf blowers compared to a rake, they blow the like the dust and the pollen and mold and everything. They blow it around into the air. I think more than a rake. Go rakes, that's what I say. And brooms. Okay, here's one more thing I want to read. This is also a letter to the editor to the Gazette by William Wallace of Florence, entitled "Loudness of America Damages Health." This is kind of dated. Maybe this is just from this past spring. I think this is from this year. April 25th is, or was, the 23rd annual International Noise Awareness Day, a time to encourage citizens to speak up quietly for their right to peace and quiet where they work, live, and play. The United States is a very noisy country. Americans are bombarded with noise from loud car stereos and loud motorcycles. Many neighborhoods are constantly bombarded with noise from leaf blowing, lawn mowing, horn honking, dog barking, and car alarms. Stores, restaurants, movie theaters, and shopping malls often blast loud music at their customers. American culture is a celebration of loudness. There are hundreds of weekend loud car stereo contests around the nation. Outdoor speaker systems and huge screen televisions are common fare in suburbia. Many professional sports teams encourage their fans to be loud and proud. The loudness of American life is very damaging. Prolonged exposure to loud noise may cause ringing of the ears, heart disease, aggravated behavior, hearing loss, and sleep deprivation. Excessive noise violates an individual's right to peace and quiet. Cities, counties, and states should enact strong anti-noise ordinances and statutes. Congress should reestablish the Federal Noise Pollution Control Office. The EPA should enforce existing regulations against altering a motorcycle's exhaust system. There should be a nationwide ban on gas-powered leaf blowers, which are very loud and emit toxic fumes. The nation needs to quiet down. Finally, individuals who support peace and quiet are encouraged to join Noise Free America, a coalition to promote quiet, at noisefree.org. Thank you, William Wallace. And thanks for listening to Out There. If you're still listening, and hopefully you're not playing the show too loud. If you're still listening, here's some night sounds from when I was sleeping in the woods in East Hampton a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know what you could hear in those sounds, but I could hear, I guess it was cicadas and jet noise. And then was it foxes or coyotes? I'm not sure if it was foxes or coyotes. I was going to say, feel free to call the studio and let me know. But I was looking for the phone and I don't see any phone here. Holler it really loud. Hey, that was coyotes. Or hey, that was foxes. Just kidding. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Next I have my dad, Jim Woodring. I'm going to see him next week.
The grass is greener. In the far-off galaxy, our twin sister planet, H-Tri, which is Earth spelled backward, began in the same manner as Earth. We had the same creator God, but that planet, they developed differently. On H-Tri, dandelions, as the national flower, had good company around people's houses. There was Queen Anne's lace and thistle and violets and clover and chicory. And the people planted kudzu to make cool, shady bowers during the hot summer months. In fact, what we call weeds, meaning useless plants thriving in wild abundance, had become their most treasured plants. Green, lush grass and neat lawns went into the ugly category for them. But trouble was coming to weed paradise. Their astronomers found a huge asteroid to be on a collision course for them, and it would surely destroy them. They had to find another planet on which to live. So Sister Earth easily became the best choice. They sent off a space mission to seek us out. And after many light years of travel, they found us and put their spaceship into orbit. even as a sister planet, they knew they had to be careful. They sent a horticultural expert down to check us out. And listen, let's listen in to his reporting. He said, well, the weather is like ours, but other things are really strange. They keep trying to eliminate God's most wonderful and valuable plants. At creation, God put in dandelions and thistle and dock and ironweed and good plants like that in a perfect no-maintenance garden. Their glorious colors and blossoms attract bees and butterflies and flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of weedy colors, but all I see are green rectangles. The tribes that live here treat God's obvious treasures as worthless. They devise plans and poisons to eradicate them. They even plant grass. The space commander answers, saying, grass, grass, that's so boring. Do they really want all that grass? Apparently so, he responded. They work hard to grow it and to keep it green. They begin in the spring by feeding the grass and poisoning everything else that tries to grow. Well, I suppose the spring rains make the grass grow really fast. That must make them happy. Well, I doubt it, said man. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it. Sometimes twice a week, said the horticulturalist. They cut it. Is it like hay? Do they harvest it and sell it? Said the commander. Well, not exactly. Most of them collect it and put it in bags. Oh, you mean they sell it for compost or mulch? No, sir. It's just the opposite. They pay to throw it away. Commander said, now let me get this straight. They fertilize the grass so it will grow, and when it does grow, they spend good money to throw it away, said the commander. Yes, sir. They must be relieved to see a late August drought. It should save them a lot of grass-tending work then. Well, you aren't going to believe this, sir. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and pay more money to water it, so they continue to mow it and pay to get rid of it. What nonsense. I can't believe it. Are there any trees? Oh, yeah, they have trees, but trees are a big problem when their leaves fall. Since the leaves keep the grass from growing, they rake them into great piles and pay to have them hauled away. You know, if they were smart, they could use the leaves for mulch around their flower beds. But after throwing the leaves away, they go out and buy bags of mulch from Walmart. Well, where's that mulch come from? Asked the commander. Well, they cut down trees and grind them up. Oh, enough. Come on back up here. Our people could not survive in such a strange place. We'll have to keep hunting for a new place where the grass is greener, as long as there's no grass.
That was my dad, Jim Woodring, reading from something he wrote, that was in a recording from Bell County, Kentucky. You're listening to Out There here on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Also, don't forget about the Rag Shag Parade tonight in Florence, I think at 5:30, the Halloween Parade, starting at Trinity Rose Triangle on Route 9 in Florence. Also, coming up tomorrow is the Surge General Meeting, Showing Up for Racial Justice, Thursday evenings, November 1st. I think it's probably at the Friends Meeting House in downtown Northampton. You can find out more information at Western Mass Surge at their Facebook page, I guess. Also, the reparations campaign is going. It'll probably be going for a long time. So you can also find out how to pay reparations and what the reparations money is going for at the Surge, Western Mass Surge website. The three main projects that they're putting reparations payments towards are, I think, Soulfire Farm, black-owned, back-to-the-land, farming farm in upstate New York in the Hudson River Valley, I think. Also, money's going towards BLM 413 and towards Springfield No One Leaves to help people own their own homes or get, yeah, to help home ownership for African Americans in Springfield. Also coming up between now and the next Out There episode is Election Day. You can vote anytime. I actually voted today because I'm going to be out of town next week, but early voting is open. You can go by Northampton City Hall to cast your ballot. Hopefully, if you're an eligible voter. And that kind of reminds me of a lot of the issues that people have with voting. Here's another article that I came across. So I don't really search out news. It sort of finds me usually. So this news that I have, I was emptying a downtown trash barrel, actually a recycling barrel. And at the bottom of the barrel was some pieces of paper. I think it was notes from a Smith College student from one of their classes. But in the notes, which was a lot about voting and how people's right to vote in different ways that it's legally taken away. Anyway, that's... hey, news from the trash is just as good as news from the TV or anywhere else, right? Or you, Facebook, who knows? Okay, so I'm scanning this article. This is actually a copied article from the New York Times that, okay. I'll just read it. Okay, if you're not registered to vote, you might still have a chance, or you may be out of luck. At this point, it all depends where you live. In New York, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Kentucky, the registration deadline has passed. And some other states, like Minnesota and Idaho, they allow citizens to register right up until the election. And sometimes they let them vote on the same day. This patchwork is the result of America's highly decentralized electoral process, which is a good design in many ways, but which leads to a wide variety of voting laws and policies from state to state. Call it the democracy gap. In the places on the wrong side of that gap, it's confusing and discouraging to potential voters, especially those most likely to have difficulty getting registered and getting to the polls in the first place. It's unnecessary because states have already shown that it's not difficult to register voters up until and on Election Day. And it's the opposite of what the world's oldest and richest, well, that may be questionable, what the world's oldest and richest democracy should be doing, which is simple. Make voting as easy and accessible as possible. Registration is a key to that effort because once people register, they're very likely to vote. In 2016, 87% of registered voters surveyed said they cast their ballot, as compared with 61% of all eligible voters. And while federal laws like the National Voter Registration Act have made registration and voting somewhat easier, they don't go far enough. Why can't every state get with the program? Partly it's bureaucratic inertia, and partly it's incumbents protecting their electorate. And partly it's that our elections are run by partisan political officials. A terrible idea, as most other modern democracies have figured out. And those countries' election administration is a job of independent commissions or other bodies that are insulated from partisan politics. Here in America, it's a job of people like Brian Kemp. Mr. Kemp is Georgia's Secretary of State, a post he's held since 2010. He's also the state's Republican candidate for governor, which means he's spent the past 8 years setting the electoral rules and practices for the same people who will decide his fate in November. During that time, Mr. Kemp has pursued multiple investigations into minority voter registration drives, alleging voter fraud even though he's found virtually none. He purged 1.5 million voters from Georgia's rolls from 2012 to 2016, more than double the number than in the previous two election cycles. And last week, this article is actually, like I said, I found it in the trash. It's from October 18th. So it's a little bit, it's a few weeks old, but no, nothing ever changes. Anyway, so recently the Associated Press reported that Mr. Kemp has suspended the registrations of 53,000 voters, 70% of whom are African American, for failing the state's unusually strict exact match policy, which requires a voter's name on his or her registration to be identical to that on other state records. If it isn't, either because of a minor typo or a clerical error, the registration is suspended until the voter resolves the discrepancy. The Justice Department blocked the first version of the exact match policy in 2009 for discriminating against Black, Asian, and Latino voters in violation of the Voting Rights Act. 4 years later, the Supreme Court gutted the heart of the act and paved the way for the policy and other discriminatory measures like it. In the absence of meaningful federal oversight of voting laws, states can take the lead. Many have already taken steps to modernize and streamline their voter registration systems. It's not hard as long as your goal is ensuring that as many people as possible can participate in the political process. The gold standard is automatic voter registration, which has become law or policy in 13 states since 2015, with more likely to adopt it soon. In states with automatic registration, which cross the political spectrum, an interaction with a government agency, like the Department of Motor Vehicles, automatically registers an eligible citizen to vote unless he or she affirmatively opts out. This increases voter turnout, saves money, and increases the accuracy of voter rolls. Automatic registration is great. Same-day registration, that's great. There's also online registration, which can help. Early voting, which helps. Anyway, vote if you can. And if you vote in Northampton, I voted today. And so there's also 5 ballot questions. One is about patient-to-nurse limits. One is about corporations not being people and limiting election spending and corporate rights. One is about transgender anti-discrimination. One is about, let me think, what was the other about? I wrote it down, but then I lost it. Oh, single-payer health insurance. And one is about ranked choice voting. So that's just about all I have for today. I'm going to play another song and I'm having my spaced out moment. So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That's what I say when I forget what I'm going to say next. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Democracy Now! comes on at 5 o'clock. And you can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com. Weatherbeard.com/out there. Okay. And a fun drive is coming up soon on Valley Free Radio, but feel free to donate to the radio station anytime you got the itch. You can donate online at valleyfreeradio.org. It's always appreciated. And here's some Alabama. Pass it on down.
We live in the land of plenty, but many things aren't plenty anymore. Like the water from our sink, they say it's not safe to drink. You gotta go and buy it at the store. Now we're told there's a hole in the ozone. Look what's washing on the beach. And Lord, I believe from the heavens to the seas, we're bringing Mother Nature to her knees. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. There's a change taking place way on the mountains. Acid rain is falling on the leaves. And down in Brazil, the fires are burning still. How we gonna breathe without them trees? So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ours to borrow. Say some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. Well, there's a place where I live called the Canyon, where Daddy taught me to swim. And that water is so pure, and I'm gonna make sure Daddy's grandkids can swim there like him.
Now we all ought to feel just a little bit guilty when we look into the eyes of our kids. Cause brothers, it's a fact, if we take and don't put back, they'll have to pay for all we did. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ash tomorrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. Well, it's only ash to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down. So let's leave some blue up above us. Let's leave some green on the ground. It's only ash to borrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on. Leave some green on the ground. It's only ours tomorrow. Let's save some for tomorrow. Leave it and pass it on down.